Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I am Lauren Tenney. Welcome to the Talk with Tenney show. I hope all is going well with you. And we had a really exciting show last night where we had people who were survivors of shock and other psychologists speaking out against electroshock and that electroshock is a crime against humanity. We have a caller on the line already. Caller, maybe calling from Skype. Your line is open.
Hi, Dr. Tini. It's Virginia. Can you hear me?
Hi, Virginia. How are you? I'm good.
I'm one of your former students. I just read in the Daily News. I know not everybody reads the Daily News, but Jacqueline Kennedy was a victim of electric shock treatment when Marilyn Monroe sang Happy Birthday to him. They wrote a book about her life, and she had several treatments of electric shock therapy. I was really shocked to read that in the paper.
Jackie Kennedy. I heard that the entire time that she was on a trip to Paris that she has no recollection of that. Did they mention that in there?
No. They just said that it was just that, and I'm sure that's going to be in the book. You know, on her book, they were just talking about the book. But it's not a nice way to control people, I'll tell you that. It's really sad, and I just wanted to share that in case the viewers didn't know, you know, somebody of her position. You know, it's not prejudice to everyone.
Everyone is at risk. Absolutely. Everyone is at risk. And Virginia, I thank you for calling in and sharing this. And I watch your posts and I see what you do, and good for you for keeping up on things. Go ahead.
Right now I'm against, as you know, I'm really against the drugs they're giving the children that are causing this violence and the suicide. It's really upsetting me, and we're doing everything we can to get it out there. The drug companies are hiding the statistics, and there's a doctor out there now who is getting it to the forefront so that people could look at it, and you know, and so I'm hoping that people realize that this shooting has nothing to do with guns or mental illness. It has to do with the drugs that are being forced on our children. And most of these schools were children, and it's affecting the children's. A lot of it was Ritalin and Prozac. You know, it doesn't do well with children at a young age.
No, it really doesn't, and it's a major issue because we are killing our kids. We have no idea of the physical and psychological effects that these drugs are going to have on them long term. We know that for adults, there's a marked 15 to 30 year loss of life for people who are on psychiatric drugs, and that's as an adult. So with children, what we're doing, and there's been a phenomenal amount of work. Ann Blake Tracy has done a ton of work around connecting the SSRIs to the mass murders, and also Dr. John Grohl on Psych Central has also done a lot of work around that in addition to showing how much money each of these drugs are making. He puts out a top 25 list each year.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I remember in 1995 I met the commissioner, and at that time in 1995 he said that the Prozac, I don't know, you don't hear about Prozac much, but that the Prozac company was in Germany, they were making $1 million a day, he told me. A day.
It's a phenomenal amount of money. This is billions of dollars that we're talking about, and added up over time, surely trillions or whatever comes after that. It's a travesty, and these are crimes against humanity. A pill is not going to solve somebody's emotional crises. A pill is not going to give somebody a house. A pill is not going to make somebody you know, feel like they're economically secure or any of that. All a pill is going to do is further disable us and prevent people from being able to get the lives that they want. And I always say I'm not opposed to drugs with informed consent. I think anybody should be able to do whatever drugs they want. But when it comes to these issues of court-ordered or coerced psychiatry,
absolutely,
or what's worse, people not really being informed,
Absolutely, especially without children.
And especially with children who have very few people sticking up for them, and especially if they're children who are in the foster care system and the state is acting as their quote-unquote parent. It's
yes.
just horrifying the
yes.
amount of drugs that people, that they have these children on, and it's all about social control and profit.
Yes.
And so I thank you for bringing that up also, and the issues of electroshock are quite significant, and the damage that it does, and that in New York State, and I think all states except Texas, ironically, it is legal to use electroshock on children, and we must stop this. That this is a crime against humanity.
The last thing I remember, I don't know if it ever came to fruition, was that they were going to do it in the office as a doctor visit. Did they ever pass that? As you should come into the office, you have electric shopping, and you go home.
They do do it on a quote unquote outpatient basis. Yes, and there are even some institutions that discharge somebody to have them be able to go get it in a quote unquote outpatient facility, and then readmit them later that day. And so we have, you know,
it's
on the show last
home
night.
Stuff.
On the special last night on electroshock, one of the things that kept on coming up is that we really don't know what the numbers are. We can estimate it's in the people have estimated 100,000 people a year in the United States. Brenda LeFrancois gave us numbers of, I think it was 500 to 3,500 children that were being electroshocked. And 1 or 2 million people worldwide, but nobody, because there's no mandate to keep records on this, and certainly not to disclose the numbers, that the state doesn't make them public. We can only imagine how bad it is. And quite frankly, if it wasn't as bad as people imagine, they should just release the numbers to prove us all wrong. But, you know, there's a reason that they don't release those numbers. And we need to keep pressure on the governments to ban this and to put a moratorium on its use until the ban is put through, and to start releasing all these numbers and having people given their lives back. Area code 5, Virginia, please stay on the line if you like. Area code 518, your line is also open.
It's Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
I just want to say, you know, there's also, and I saw a story a few years ago on the news, and I haven't seen anything about it since, but there was, like, people who were doing shock at home.
Oh.
It was, like, at-home kits. I saw it on a news program, and I haven't heard much about it since, so that was kind of scary. You know, it was kind of like, you know, a little zap in the morning will do you good, you know. And it was kind of really scary, you know. And you know, I got in a little late, but I heard you talking about children, and it's just disgusting, you know. And the thing that bothers me the most is that a lot of the children in the foster care system are, you know, are being shocked and also medicated. You know, they're dealing with trauma. They're, you know, maybe they faced abuse at home before they became in the foster care system, or just being in the foster care system is traumatic. And, you know, and this is being pathologized. You know, instead of being talked about or having talk therapy, they're being medicated and stuff like that. And I think I heard, where I don't know how accurate this is, that so, you know, a foster care parent, I think I read it, where a foster care parent will get, like, so much money, much more money if a child is in the system. If the child's being medicated, they get so much more money per day. You know, it's disgusting. I mean, it's just outrageous to me. And I don't understand how this stuff goes on, you know, and I'm continually just surprised and just exasperated at the stuff that goes on in the psychiatric industry.
I have a
it
tape.
It goes unchecked almost, you know.
I have a tape, The Abuses of Psychiatry, and they mentioned there in the 60s, in the 50s and the 60s, how they used minority children to experiment on drugs and medication.
And they still do that. Is that Gary Knowles?
Yes. Yeah.
History of that's a phenomenal piece of work, and they're still doing it. They're absolutely still doing it, and people of color are being targeted by this. They are overrepresented in court ordered services. They are overrepresented in institutions. And when it came that the legislature demanded that the state let people in and do an investigation that Schwartz et al. Through Duke University did, they
mm-hmm.
found that African Americans were 3 to 8 times more likely to be court-ordered
mm-hmm.
into involuntary outpatient commitment, 5 times more likely than whites statewide. And their response was that there was no room to deal with it there, but this was probably a factor of the fact that African Americans are more likely to be poor, more likely to be in the public system, et cetera, et cetera. So institutional and structural racism exists in America, and it's perfectly fine that the Office of Mental Health is duplicating it. And that is basically the way that the Duke study that everybody, you know, hails as the authoritative understanding of Kendra's Law plays out. And so we need to also constantly be talking about general oppression that people are experiencing and the discrimination that people experience every day that's at the underlying issue of economics, which is very often when it's an adult who gets in the system, what is at the heart of the problem. And for children who wind up in the system, this becomes even more complicated because they don't even have the ability to try to economically fend for themselves and get out. And they're trapped, and all they're doing is being drugged and tested and experimented on. And I really, you know, out of the research that we did for that all these people helped with me doing for the dissertation, Devoiced, out of the 14 people who participated in the actual research part, one was a parent of a child who, when the child was in foster care, was the subject of experimentation,
mm-hmm.
and one was a child who was experimented on in the 1940s and in the 1990s. So a 50-year gap of foster care. So out of 14 people, two people being this close to it were directly experiencing it. The experimentation of children in foster care, we need to look into that. We need to protect these kids and make sure that the state isn't just selling them away in these corporate partnerships that they have with these drug companies and just perpetrators.
Lobbyists.
I don't understand how this force out. You know, this is kind of well known that this is going on. And maybe I sound naive. I am naive, although I've been doing this a long time. I don't think I'm pretty cynical. I don't understand how this has gone unchecked for so long. Why is this still going on? I don't understand why human rights groups and stuff have not really been able to make an impact on this. How is this still happening to children? I just don't get it. I mean, I think maybe is that the general public doesn't know what's going on, because if the general public knew what was going on, maybe there would be an outcry, you know, or an outrage.
A lot of people say the general public is too busy with distractions of TV and really becomes an advocate for anything. Everybody is so distracted and they want to hear silly nonsense in the paper. Gary had interviewed a whole bunch of journalists and asked them why they put silly stuff in the paper, and it was like a whole show just based on that and how people want to be distracted. Nobody wants to deal with the real issues.
And meanwhile, we're killing our kids. And if they make it out that they wind up getting institutionalized or involuntary committed, so many young people are being targeted by these involuntary outpatient commitment laws when they're coming out as a way to, the same way they're using it as a quote unquote discharge plan for adults. Kids who are coming out of the system, turning 18 years old, we won't keep you here. You can go to this place or that place if you sign this agreement. And it's another whole group that they're just mandating into participation with this fraud. That it's criminal. It's just criminal.
It's the psychiatric industry.
Yeah. Virginia, I'm sure we have a lot more listeners now because of minutes to get rolling. Would you mind talking just briefly again about the article that you called in about?
Oh, sure. I read an article in the Daily News of there's a book being written about Jacqueline Kennedy, and when her husband was cheating and Marilyn Monroe sang his birthday song, she flipped out and he had her sent for electric shock treatment. Yeah, that she was a victim of electric shock treatment because of her husband's infidelities. That's kind of, you know, with Marilyn Monroe, it's kind of crazy.
It really is.
I mean, they used it to suppress her because she was upset about what he did. I mean, that's like total control and abuse of a wife and the first lady of our country. It really shocked me, I have to say.
It's
who wrote the article?
When was it? It was in yesterday's paper. It was in yesterday's paper in the Daily News because they're promoting her book. Someone is writing a book about her life.
I'm trying to pick it up now to get the citation. But it was in the Daily News. But I mean, this just shows that nobody is free of this. The misogyny behind the entire thing. That, you know, last night one of the things Don Wheats from Canada who brought up is 70% of the women in Canada, of the people who are getting shocked in Canada are women. We know in New York the person most likely to get shocked is a woman over 62 years of age. And so the idea that, so am I understanding correctly that according to this article, she was upset about his affair and he had her electroshocked?
Yes.
Great. That's the American way, right?
It's going to ruin his political. You know, it's going to ruin his political standing. We don't want to do that.
It really is. And people, you know, last night, people really spoke to the trauma and the crime against humanity that electroshock is, and all of these people who are. Who are going through this and who have survived it and who have come out the other side and are able to talk about it. I just found the article. It's Bill Hutchinson wrote it for the New York Daily News. Explosive new biography reveals Jackie Kennedy was set to divorce JFK before assassination. Explosive. Yeah, so I'm trying to...
it's there.
There we go. She went... so it says, one night when JFK returned home to a hotel from a hotel romp with a mistress, he and Jackie got into an ugly fight that spilled into the street. Following the domestic blow-up, not domestic violence, the domestic blow-up, Kennedy had his wife committed to the Valley Head Clinic in Carlisle, Massachusetts, where she underwent 3 electroshock treatments.
Nice.
Was that before he was president or while he was president?
No, this was while he was, it said before, yeah, while he was president. Oh, wow, this is a really mind-blowing article, huh?
Could you believe that?
Well, it's just a goddamn Secret Service at this point, you know?
It's,
now it comes out. Now it comes out. Sure.
Yeah. Huh. This book that's coming out, Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, A Life Beyond Her Wildest Dreams, and it was obtained by the Daily Mail. And so, you know, if the First Lady can be, accused insane by her president husband because she's upset that. And has had enough of his philandering and his affairs, and gets into a fight, and the result is that she's committed to the Valley Head Clinic in Carlisle, Massachusetts. Here we are, back in Massachusetts, right? Is the Carlisle Clinic the Harvard University's clinic? Who is the Valley Head Clinic? And undergone three shocks.
Was it enough to shock?
I mean, do you know what year
was it
was
enough
or
to
what
shock
month it was?
In 63? No.
It
died in
63. I'm just looking here. Live radio, folks.
He
I'm,
died in 63.
She also had a miscarriage while she was first lady, too, and I'm wondering if there's a correlation.
he was carriage and the shock.
He was assassinated in 63, so it was
November,
right before.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was right before, so it had to be around that time.
I don't remember when she had the miscarriage, but I'm wondering if there's a coalition.
I have a friend who's a nurse in the 70s, and she said that she assisted a pregnant woman to shock therapy. I said, how could you do that? I could have never done that. I would have walked out. I could have never did that, ever.
Yeah, that was talked about last night, too. Pregnant women are being shocked,
Right, and I mistakenly, I want to clarify this, and Amy, if you're listening, thanks for clearing this up. I was mistaken. I said depression. It wasn't for depression. The article for NAMI supporting electroshock in pregnant women was for women who were diagnosed with, quote-unquote, bipolar disorder.
Oh, wonderful.
NAMI supports it. What a shock.
Yeah,
wow.
they support
that's
it,
disgusting.
And they...
that's disgusting.
They support it, and they... this silly computer. They support it and they encourage it. It's more than supporting. I'm trying to
and then
get there.
And then I'll talk about all the teeth that break and crack. Oh, no, that's okay. Yeah.
I think, Kathy, your consistent work on this over the years to try to inform people about how little informed consent is actually available for people.
Yep.
And maybe could you talk about that a little bit while I try to pull this up?
Sure. Well, I mean, when I was, in terms of the ECT and informed consent, when I first had my first series, I didn't have any, nobody told me anything. And then when I was having my second series, for some reason they were showing me a video by Dr. Max Fink had made. He's a shock doc down in Long Island. And in this video, it's all very benign and it's all very calm, and they show someone being shocked, a woman being shocked, and nothing. It's perfectly safe. It's just her little toe moves and all this stuff. And in this video, people are asking questions like, will I forget, the people, there'll be some memory loss, or will I forget the people closest to me, like my husband and my children, saying, oh, no, you won't, and stuff like this. And I just want to let you know that it's all lies, because during my treatments, I had a herniated disc in my neck, and I forgot, my boyfriend at the time. He called up on the phone. I had no idea who he was. Okay. So in terms of losing, forgetting the people closest to you, And it's just, that's not, they consider that informed consent. You have to watch this video before. And, that's what they consider informed consent. And it's just a bunch of bull, It just doesn't show, it doesn't really answer any questions. It doesn't really talk about the trauma. It doesn't talk about the long-term memory
it's
loss.
It's deceptive.
And, it's just, and then, I talked about how a big proponent for shock for a long, long time was Dr. Harold Sackheim. And in I think it was in 2009, I could be wrong on the date, he reversed it. He was saying, there's no, he had always said there was no, proof that you had lost your memory and it was caused by that. But then he reversed his decision. And he had written in the journal, JAMA, the Journal of American Medicine, and, that, he was wrong and that there is evidence that it causes, long-term memory loss. I mean, it is brain damage, what they're causing. They're causing grand mal seizure, and it's brain damage. And that's, there's nothing of that was said in that little video, grand mal seizures are brain damage, and, that's the whole purpose of it. And so none of that was, I don't feel that was really informed consent. So I feel, that, of course, like most people I was lied to, like the psychiatric industry is so good at.
Did they document anything in the peer-reviewed journals that there's actual proof that that this is effective or there's cures? God forbid we should say the word cure.
There's no proof. They don't even know how it works. If you ask a doctor, how does this work? We don't know. We just know that it affects people. They're shooting, volts of electricity to your brain, but they have no idea what the hell's going on in there.
That's the key word. It affects people. Yeah, it affects people in a very negative way.
And the goal was to create brain damage. I mean, that was the implicit goal.
Yeah.
The first article on it was to shock and control people. People should read Leonard Roy Frank's Electroshock Quotationary. It's free.
Right.
You can get it online. Leonard Roy Frank Electroshock Quotationary. If you Google that, it'll come right up. I found the entry from NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, on women and bipolar and pregnancy. And so along with a whole list of, you know, antipsychotics and second-generation antipsychotics, tranquilizers, so on and so forth, they say electroconvulsive therapy, and it's not therapy. This isn't treatment. This is torture.
Yeah, you just said you think torture, yeah.
And so what they write is when used in women who are pregnant, ECT may pose fewer risks than untreated mood episodes or treatment with medications known to be harmful to fetuses. Complications of ECT during pregnancy are uncommon. Monitoring heart rate and oxygen levels of the fetus during ECT can detect most problems, and medications are available to correct difficulties.
Oh, my God.
Though some birth defects, developments, delays, or mental retardation have been described in children of women who underwent ECT while pregnant, there is not a number or pattern of these reports that suggests a relationship to ECT. It is very important for pregnant women who undergo ECT to stay nourished and hydrated to help prevent premature contractions, intubation, acids may also be used to decrease the risk of gastric regurgitation or lung inflammation during anesthesia for ECT. So this is what NAMI is putting out. And I just have to deter here for a second because I went on a little hunt today. Now, of course, I'm losing the page of all of the NAMI-supported pharmaceuticals. And it was something like $538,000 has already been generated by NAMI in the first quarter of 2014. And all of the money is from pharmaceutical industries, health service corporations.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's all pharmaceutical driven, and all there is, and they have the audacity to say that they don't promote any specific drug or treatment. And I guess that's because
they take money from
them all, and so
I think it was reported over 75% of their funding comes from pharmaceutical companies, right?
Right, and they're supposed to be a nonprofit, so they're really not.
Right.
They're just a front for the pharmaceutical industries.
Yep.
I remember when they were trying to promote it to be in the office visit, at that time, this was back in the 90s, it was going to be $1,000 a treatment to bill to the insurance company. I don't know, you know, from then till now if that changed, but that's what I was told back then in the 90s when they were trying to promote this patient visit electroshock treatment. Yeah.
Huh. $100,000 times 100,000 people.
$1,000 per treatment.
$1,000 times
per treatment. And that was in the 90s. I'm sure it's more now.
Yep.
I know that in Linda Andre's book, which if you haven't heard of it, go get it. It's Doctors of Deception, What They Don't Want You to Know About Shock Therapy. It came out in, I think, 08 or 09. It came out after the Sackheim report came out that Kathy just talked about. And in there she says that they make, I think, 2 or 3 times more than a typical psychiatrist. And the flooding of it, and that this can be court-ordered on somebody, and that this is court-ordered on people. This is not just about a voluntary choice to, you know, destroy your brain and your memory and your body and put yourself in a position where you might wind up dying. And, you know, somebody was mentioning to me the other day that it's it's almost like a terrible option to give to somebody who may be so severely dissatisfied with life that the idea of a potential life-threatening operation seems hopeful to them, and that the response for this shock survivor who shared this with me privately, that I just anonymously wasn't so much that maybe that this would work, but maybe that this would kill them, and that was why they agreed to do it.
I was just going to say, I mean, you're talking to somebody who doesn't, you know, who's given up hope and stuff, they're like, what the hell, do whatever you want to me. You know, almost like, you know, and I think that, you know, Linda had told me that, you know, I had mentioned Dr. Max Fink, you know, the shock doctor, and she had mentioned to me that he had, you know, some stock or had owned or co-owned a company that produces the machines. And I think he, you know, that's a conflict of interest. And I think she was trying to get somebody to look at that with him, you know. And
that's,
I think that's the case. I think a lot of these shock docs, I think a lot of them have
more money, financial interest.
Yeah,
to build the insurance companies per unit. But I wanted to ask you something. How long did it take for doctors to stop performing lobotomies? Remember when lobotomies were a big thing? And
well, they
I think not too long ago. I'm not sure they did stop, actually.
They absolutely did not stop it. There is actually an article. I wrote about this in the D Voice. There's actually an article that talks about, now it's called psychosurgery for psychiatric disorders.
Right.
And they talked about how they wanted to move away from the term lobotomy and then how they wanted to move away from the term psychosurgery. And so while it's still not exactly the ice pick and the clear barbarianism of the entire thing, they are still cutting out pieces of people's brains and purposely damaging brains.
I've met people, yeah.
Oh,
and,
my God.
I've met people that have had it done.
And sometimes
and
it's also
old,
called
either.
A... sometimes it's also called a cingulotomy, or psychosurgery for psychiatric disorders, so they're still doing it, and that's what they do, Virginia. Every time every time it comes to public attention, what this field is doing, they just change their name. They went from alienists to doctors to psychiatrists. The Commission on Lunacy, to the State Hospital Commission, to the Office of Mental Hygiene, to the Office of Mental Health, and now switching over to the Office of Behavioral Health. They just change the language, and it becomes more pervasive and heavier tax-funded and state-sponsored, state power to torture, abuse, and kill people.
Well, IOC, involuntary outpatient commitment, became assisted outpatient commitment.
Right, and they had meetings where they were intentionally trying to make it sound like a kinder, gentler form of torture.
Yep.
And they had meetings where they debated over what should we call this thing, since we can't call it involuntary outpatient commitment because of the way that sounds.
You know, they make Hitler sound like a child's play. I swear to God. Remember all the medical stuff he did on people? They make him seem like that's child's play compared to what's going on in this time, or in this century.
I don't see the difference between them and Mengele, actually.
Wow.
It's really no difference,
I think it's worse.
And they're crimes against humanity, and they should be charged with crimes against humanity. And they
Hello?
Hi, area code 718, your line is open. You're on the air.
Okay, I would like to ask you a question. What if the reason why someone is forced to take psychiatric medication is because the person is dangerous? What's the correct way to address the problem? I don't know why the person is dangerous. I just want to know, how do you get rid of the dangerousness and whatever problems cause the person to be dangerous?
Well, I think that that's the first. The first thing is that there's no such thing, that psychiatry is a fraud, and that the psychiatry has any answers to control dangerousness is a fraud, and things
Good
that are
point.
Considered psychiatric are not things that are considered dangerous. In none of the actual categories of the quote-unquote clusters of symptoms that the Diagnostic Statistical Manual puts out, is dangerousness a symptom? Somebody's got their computer on in the background. If you can turn the voice down, because we're getting
feedback. Oh, I'm very sorry.
That's okay.
I was talking about somebody I know. One of the things this person has done after having been forced to take psychiatric medications is that, this is according to what someone told me, that the person threatened to burn down his house. He told the police. I don't know what led to the police coming. The person used to abuse his father. Later on, the father passed away probably due to old age, and now he lives alone. I don't want to mention the person's name because I don't want to embarrass the person.
After he took psych meds?
What's that?
You said he became dangerous after he took psych meds.
I don't know when he became dangerous for the first time. I don't know his story.
Right.
It could have been before I first encountered the person, before I first moved into my current neighborhood. I don't know the story, but that's one of the things the person has done.
That's criminal. It's not things that are things that are psychiatric aren't criminal. That's criminal.
Yeah,
true.
Sometimes people are just evil.
I think in 2014 we really need to reevaluate what is and what isn't legal or illegal. But the continued association of psychiatric anything with a crime or
violence
or dangerousness is part of the thing that is damaging all people who have been psychiatrically labeled. So the psychiatric profiling that comes out of this, that is based on non-factual information. When you hear these Congress people talking, like Murphy, you know, in the same breath they say, we know people who have psychiatric histories are more likely to be a victim of crime than a perpetrator, but we have to put these laws together to stop them from doing anything that they're really not doing anything of. Maybe it's 1% of 1% of all people who are psychiatrically labeled, but we need to create this wide law affecting everyone so that we can keep that while we ignore the fact that while there may have been this group of 5 or 10 murders, which are heinous, and I'm in no way advocating violence or murder or anything like that, there were over 10,000 murders in the year. So why is it the only murders and violence that we ever hear about is from people who have psychiatric histories? Because it's easy to make us the other person. Now, when people have experiences of trauma and have deep emotional things, the other thing that I would be curious of is, did somebody say, I feel like burning this house down, like out of anger and desperation and fear and emotion? Or did somebody have a plan to create a crime? And those are two very different things. Having a thought that makes other people uncomfortable isn't something that necessarily needs action. And when you're in a position of where you're in involuntary treatment and you don't feel comfortable, like Michael who called in the other night, that you're scared to say what it is you're really thinking, because at any given point, these people can lock you up based on what it is you say.
And
nobody
I've heard
can
that
ever
many
really express and heal their emotions.
Right.
And I think when we take a trauma-informed approach to these things instead of a medical model approach, which has consistently not been able to prove any evidence for its existence, and the only evidence that it offers is that it does damage to 2/3 of the people that come in contact with it, and maybe more if you look at all of the people who are voluntarily taking these drugs and experiencing terrible side effects, kidney, liver damage, metabolic syndrome, tardive dyskinesia, neuroleptic malignant syndrome. It just goes on and on and on, diabetes, that the drugs actually cause. It's criminal to continue looking at things as if psychiatry has some kind of answer outside of social control and drugs and institutionalization. That is all they offer.
You brought out a very good point.
Can't predict violence any more than anybody else can.
You brought out an excellent point. I remember now an incident, I'm sure it happened many times, where this woman just went in, she was feeling depressed, and she went in to talk to a psychiatrist. She says, I just want to kill myself. And the next thing you know, he committed her. He had her committed. I mean, you can't one time my son said that. I said, please, just, you can't say that in today's society. You must never say that outside, please, not in school, nowhere. I was panicking. Because, you know, the next thing I know, who knows where he'll, you know, anybody winds up. You can't express anything. You can't say anything.
And yet on primetime TV, we have, you know, a show called Just Shoot Me.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And so who gets served what is always based on what your what oppressions you're under already in the society. And people need to understand that under the Affordable Care Act, we're all subject to it. Every single person is subject to mandatory
yes.
mental health screenings and drug and alcohol screenings. But if you are receiving social services, you are targeted for these things. Area code 202, your line is open.
Yeah, this is Yvonne Smith. I just wanted to say something about that.
Hey, Yvonne.
We have to decouple prevention of violence and mental health. And just what the lady was saying about someone feeling like they wanted to kill themselves or burn the house down, what happens is when violence prevention is up front, we can have a conversation. I mean, the conversation, you know, that people should be having with that person, if they really are concerned, is, well, what do you mean you want to
right.
burn your house down?
Right.
And why? And getting a little bit more into why. I mean, many times people are lonely. I think someone just said that the person, the father had died and he was living by himself. Once you get into violence prevention mode, then all conversation stops. And as a suicide survivor myself, the thing about it is, when you have suicidal thoughts, they don't go away instantly because someone takes you up and snaps you into the hospital.
Right.
Even if
worse,
you're there
maybe.
And you have every intention on working on whatever it is, in a couple of days, that may not go away like that. So we have to decouple violence prevention from counseling or even talking to people, because that just ends everything. And I know that that's what fuels a lot of this. And at the same time, there are people that are just monsters. Even for those people who are listening who do believe that there's such a thing as mental illness, mental illness is not an excuse for bad behavior. You know, a person's judgment may be compromised because of things that happened in the past. But we've got to decouple this.
Absolutely.
The person that's concerned about his neighbor or whatever else, or someone, so they don't know the full story. Even all these cases that they use as a reason, and I just saw a statement from Congressman Murphy says that he intends to have his Murphy bill passed before there's another incident. And that's why I say we can't relax, because there is going to be something else to happen. But these kind of things are such a small blip. If you took the amount of people that had domestic violence, that's a more predictor of someone whether they're going to use gun violence. If the person has had a police call because of domestic violence, then the fact that a person may have a mental illness.
Right, and of course, Kennedy can call a domestic blow-up and have Jackie locked up and shocked, and that this is where it's coming from. I want to call everybody's attention to an article published by the Alliance for Human Research Protection that was published on May 8th, 2013. And so this is going back a bit, but I think it's important that we revisit. The title of the article is Two NIMH National Institute of Mental Health Directors Bunk DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, and Deplore Psychiatry's Unscientific Modus Operandi. And on April 2nd, 2013, Dr. Stephen Hyman, a neuroscientist and former director of NIMH, acknowledged in an article posted on the DANA website that, quote, "The underlying science remains immature, The molecular and cellular underpinnings of psychiatric disorders remain unknown. There is a broad disillusionment with the animal models used for decades to predict therapeutic efficacy. Psychiatric diagnoses seem arbitrary and lack objective tests, and there are no validated biomarkers with which to judge the success of clinical trials.
So,
And so it's garbage. The entire thing is garbage. INSIL came out more recently and said that that the DSM has no validity. That there the entire system that is being brought up, everything that Murphy is trying to do in passing H.R. 3717 is based on fraud and lies. And the mainstream media is not covering our perspectives, and all it does is continue giving this message to society that psychiatry has the answers, and if only we could help these poor people.
Well, they're doing a good job of doing this. I search the internet every day, and I find that I'm just surprised at the reach that these people have, even going to the United Kingdom and other places, that, I mean, they have a full head-on press to convince the world that that there are people who are dangerous out here, and the dangerousness comes from the fact that they have, quote-unquote, these are not my words, untreated mental illness, that they're in... that some of us are in denial about an illness, and they have a full-on, I don't know what marketing machine they have, but they're just, they have a full-on press, and it just doesn't seem that the radio, TV, they just take everything that they say as gospel. They don't seem to even be able to ask follow-up questions to even question it. I mean, it's just very disappointing that the press is letting this happen. That you know that this, like you said, this untruth, this falsehood, this kind of like a fairy tale. I think that in another maybe, hopefully, it won't be 20 years. I think that people will be comparing ECT and the use of drugs. We'll be thinking of it just like bloodletting, like in the 17th and 18th century where they bled people.
Right.
They'll be thinking of it as that instance. And the other lady made some comment about Mengele. And, you know, I think about this all the time when they talk about twin studies. They're always urging people, quote, unquote, if they have a child who has schizophrenia, allegedly has schizophrenia, and they're twin, they want to bring them in for study.
I heard about that too, yes.
Yeah, it really is just heinous what it is that they're doing, and that they use these rare examples of horrible acts that absolutely do not represent an entire population of people to carry forward laws and legislation that is just going to take away everybody's human and civil rights. And every time one person's human and civil rights are trampled on, all of theirs are trampled on,
yeah.
Not to mention constitutional rights. I mean, if people don't see this clearly, that we're going to start with this little group of people and create special laws for this little group of people as like a practice run for how they're going to do it for everybody. And that, you know, that this is a constructed machine here that we're talking about. And these things are not... They come after us first, and historically have. Same with the Nazi camps of where they tested the gas chambers on people with quote unquote schizophrenia. Area code 650, your line is open.
Oh hi, I've actually had electric shock treatment, so I know how evil it is. I actually have nightmares. I've lost my long-term memory. I now know that the first time I got electric shock treatment and the last time I was abruptly taken off a drug, which was really the cause. I was in psychosis when they told me I was hopeless and med-resistant. And from my records, leaving the hospital, they tripled my meds, although they tell you you're med-resistant. It's been a nightmare for me. I know actually a lot of people I've talked to have had shock treatment. they told my family as I'm laying in the hospital, dead, not talking or eating, not knowing I was in a cold turkey from their negligence, that, you know, they showed them movies of movie stars getting it, and, oh, she might lose some of her short-term memory, but it usually comes back. They didn't talk about brain damage. They didn't talk about psychological problems or losing your long-term memory. They don't say anything about any of this stuff. My brother said they make it sound like it's no big deal at all.
Mm-hmm.
It is such a crime. Such a crime.
As a matter of fact, the lady that lives a couple houses down from me, you know, because I'm actually getting off of all the psych meds now. I'm doing so much better. I lost 11 years of my life because of psychiatry. My eyesight's improved. I don't shake anymore. My personality's coming back, my spiritual connection. And I went 2 doors down to get an address from this lady, and she couldn't believe the change in me. And she asked me, so I gave her the gist of my story. And when I mentioned electric shock treatment, she was like, oh, I didn't think they did that anymore. She says, where did you get it at? And I said, well, the last time I got it, I don't know if I should say the name on the radio show, but I told her. And she said, I've worked there for years. And I go, well, see how hidden it is? It's being done right in the basement of where you work, and you don't even know what's going on. Do you see them advertising electric shock treatment on the TV as they so do with psych, you know, these psych drugs? No.
They're advertising electroshock on TV?
No, they're not. That's what I mean.
Oh.
They don't.
Oh, they're not. Oh, okay. I was going to say. No, right.
Yeah,
but it's all happening right blindly in front of everybody.
Yeah,
hidden
most
in the
people
basement.
Most people I talk to, because I used to be ashamed when I thought it was my own mind. This all started with a divorce, by the way. I had a happy childhood, a happy life, family, friends, my own business, spiritual connection, and you know, when I'm out, I used to be ashamed because I thought it was my own mind. I'm not ashamed anymore. I tell everybody about psychiatry and how bad it is. And
good
most people I talk to, they don't even know electric shock treatment still exists. They don't. Because they keep it hidden. I mean, the United Nations, I did a lot of research on it. The United Nations, they used to use it for torture on prisoners of war. And the United Nations said that, because they said it was inhumane, yet everyone, not just in the United States, but around the world, is getting this treatment. In the United States, it's 100,000 Americans a year that get shock treatment. And believe me, you're in no state to be making a decision like that when you're getting this treatment.
Right. And you know, just the two different United Nations special rapporteurs on the Convention Against Torture have now said that electroshock in 08, it may constitute torture or ill treatment, and in 2013, it does constitute torture or ill treatment. And so every state or country in the world that is using electroshock is in violation of the Convention Against Torture. And I really thank you for speaking out and for sharing your story. And do you have a website or books or a way people can contact you? Or
Can I give my email? What would I do? I don't mind people contacting me at all because, you know, I've been lucky. You know, someone opened up the doors to all kinds of groups for me and organizations. There's so much support out there for people coming off these medications and trying to get their life back, and I have no problem with anybody contacting me. I just don't know.
Where are you located?
I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Oh, great. And I know that there are people who are in the San Francisco Bay who are looking to organize and who are working to try to find people. And so, if you want to
be connected to them.
Yeah, if you want to give your your email, or if you want to email me or call me, my email is laurentenny@AOL. And I can pass on
to people. Let me write this down.
Okay.
Wait, 1 second.
Yeah, everybody, this is the time to get your pen and paper out. And so my email is Lauren Tenney, Lauren, T as in Thomas, Enney, at AOL.com. And my Twitter is Lauren10E, 10E, all one word. And I think that my contact information is on the Blog Talk Radio Talk with Tenney page. And so you can get my websites and information there. And I think one of the reasons, though, I'm attempting this, this is like I think our second or third week into the process now of this show, is to try to figure out a way to connect people who may not be connected and to really have our movement go back to its original roots of people organizing and acting and getting public attention and letting the public know what's really going on.
Did the young lady that was asking, telling about her story about the electroshock, did you have any breaking of teeth or bones during the process? Because I understand.
The thing is people also think that electric shock treatment isn't as dangerous as it was back then. But from my research, it's actually more dangerous because they drug you so much.
Oh my God.
That they have to use more electricity so they can see the seizure. And they see the seizure from your toes. So they're actually using more electricity because you're drugged up with, muscle relaxers and all this stuff. So people think it's not as bad, but it actually uses more electricity.
That is so deceptive. Oh, my gosh.
And general anesthesia three times a week, right? No, what was that? Don White's line, they have ECT for breakfast and Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Maintenance ECT, as I understand it, because I looked into it myself, and you just don't have one or two. Then they have maintenance ECT. You have to come back and get more. Isn't that the way that they sell it to you that way?
Yes. They usually give you, 9 to 12 treatments. And I even went on Johns Hopkins' website, to see what they, the so-called, say about shock treatment. And they don't even know how it works. What they say is if it works, it causes what's called the euphoria state, which, you could get a euphoria state from drinking alcohol, and that it usually, if it works, it doesn't last more than 6 months, and you better be on medications, which, again, they sound really stupid because that makes no sense at all because they're saying you're med-resistant and drugs don't work on you. So it's just these people are insane. They're the ones that are insane, and they're creating insanity. It's such a joke.
Have you ever heard of anyone that raved about saying, oh, just ring me up again?
Have I ever heard what?
Have you ever heard people rave about it?
No, I haven't. But you got to understand, just to give you an example, I know someone who's an electrician, okay? Well, an electrician deals with electricity, right?
Right.
And
he said to me,
wait, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
He said he would never be, stupid enough to get it. And he says, it's two different things. And I said, oh, is there another kind of electricity?
Really?
And he said, no. He goes, that's your point. Electricity is frying the neurons in your brain. It's electricity.
Right.
And quite ironically, when I was a little girl, I used to throw shows in my backyard. And I couldn't get the cord out from the extension cord, so I put it in my mouth.
Oh.
And it bent the whole bottom part of my lip. This was when I was 7 years old. My mom reminds me of this again because of my memory. And the doctor even, they said, oh, your lip will grow back, and it did. But the doctor said, if I would have, I could have died. Seconds more and I could have died. And electricity fries your brain. It's electricity. It does damage. It causes
torture.
People, lawyers, people that go to school, college, lose all the memory of the knowledge for the field they're in. Ernest Hemingway commits suicide after getting shock treatment. I mean, it's so hidden because it is bad. It's evil. It harms people. It's really, all the research is there if you go on the computer. Dr. Breggin is a really good website to go on, just to name one, because there's so many, and he talks about electric shock treatment very extensively, along with drugs and other things. But, you know,
yeah,
but there is a lot of support out there. There's a lot of groups online for people. I was kind of off by myself alone, not knowing all the support, and luckily I got connected to it all. So, you know, I do want to make sure that people that are out there that think they're alone and don't understand what's happening to their mind and, you know, think there's something wrong with them when it's actually the medications and the shock treatment that's screwing them up, that they do have hope and there are people to help them through this and get their life back. I mean, I was pretty hopeless, you know. I was on 14 medications, 12 medications 14 months ago, you know. I mean, they just polydrug people. But I'm getting my life back, and I was
a hopeless
case. So everyone recovers. It just takes time for your body to heal, your central nervous system to heal.
Just getting off all that to make you feel better. But I was just reading here that Dr. Breggin was actually a medical expert on, and he was part of an expert for a malpractice suit won by injured patients. In fact, this individual won $1 million.
You're talking about the Respirdal case recently?
I'm talking about the ECT case. Dr. Brayden was a medical expert in the first and only electroshock malpractice suit.
Yes, I know what you're talking about, yes.
Yeah.
He does phenomenal work. And actually, Brenda LaFrancois, who was on last night, co-authored an article with him and others about ECT on electroshock on children. And so Breggin.com, Breggin.com is a website that people should definitely check out, and Google him and you'll find all other kinds of initiatives that he's involved in too.
He's got a book, ECT, Electroshock, It's Brain Disabled Effects, and that's not a new book. It's since 1979. So, it's surprising that this is still going on. Does anybody know how Ray is doing? That was the guy that they had a Mind Freedom Shield. I remember they were shocking him forcibly.
I haven't talked with him in some time, quite some time. My understanding is that it was ended, that the court-ordered electroshock in Minnesota that Ray Sanford was going through, that it was ended, and that the members of Mind Freedom International are a great support network. If you have a Mind Freedom Shield, if you're somebody who's out there and is, dealing with involuntary psychiatry or afraid you might have to be dealing with involuntary psychiatry, membership through Mind Freedom International would allow you to activate the shield where all members would make calls and contact legal representatives and others on your behalf with the message that you wanted them to hear. And so that's another great resource for people.
They do comfort calls.
What's that?
They do comfort calls to people that, you know, are in institutions or not doing well. And actually, that's how I got connected to this whole world, because since it was a volunteer that called me, she runs a group. And she's the one that opened up this whole world to me of all these people like us that are been damaged by psychiatry and are coming off these drugs. And, that's how I got hooked up, was a comfort call from Mind Freedom. You know, people called me. It's a really good service, too.
That's really amazing. And so if you're out there and you're listening, take this as your call. And you can reach me at area code 718-273-8708 anytime the show is not on air. And if you'd like to call in, the number is area code 267-521-0167. To call in now live, it's area code 267-521-0167. Dr. John Breeding was on the show last night. I'm sorry?
I didn't catch your whole phone number when you're not.
Oh, sorry. Area code 267-521-0167.
Is that the number you just gave for when you're not on?
The tip line number is area code 718-273-8708.
Thank you.
Lauren, I'm going to say goodnight.
Okay, thank you for calling, Virginia.
You're welcome.
And I think we're going to keep talking about Jackie Kennedy and the fact that the First Lady can be electroshocked because she was sick of her husband who was having affairs.
Yeah. Well, you're a fabulous warrior, and keep up the good work.
Likewise, thank you, and hope to talk with you soon. Thanks.
All right, bye.
So Dr. John Breeding was also on the show last night, and he suggested the website endofshock.com. which has a ton of references and information, and also information about Leonard Roy Frank and the electroshock quotationary. And then also psychrights.org also has a ton of information about electroshock and drugging and all other kinds of legal actions that people might want to look into and think about taking. So I think that, you know, for people to know that there is a movement out there, and I'm glad to be connected with you, and I hope that you get in touch. And
yes, definitely. I just saw this on Facebook, actually. I was going through my Facebook, and that's when I saw this, so I called the number. So I really appreciate that you're doing this. This is really good. Thank you so much, and I will contact you. I'd love to talk to you more.
Absolutely, and you know, if there's something like a special issue that you want to bring up or something that you want us to follow, please, you know, feel free to, you know, like, let's arrange how to do that. And because I know the San Francisco Bay Area has some old-time activists, Ted Chabaczynski being the first coming to mind, that would really, I think that, you know, really are looking to stop this and ban the use of electroshock and inform the public about the drugs and, you know, have us freed from the original Mental Patients Liberation Movement of the 70s, you know?
Yes.
So getting back there, that would be great. And I think, I don't know if you're going July 24th to the 27th. In Connecticut is going to be Mind Freedom's Creative Revolution Conference at Wisdom House, and I believe registration is still available for that, and they have day passes, and they're trying to work on a scholarship fund. And so I think there's
I still have two drugs to come off of. I just started my taper on Klonopin, so I'm still in the withdrawal process, so I probably won't be able to do that, but that's good to know.
Absolutely.
And I'll pass around this information that I just got to others about you and what you're doing and your talk show and your number some groups I'm on.
Thanks. And if there's somebody who wants to come on and be a guest or, you know, schedule a specific topic, just have them call me at the 718-273-8708 number, and we can arrange that. Getting in on the ground floor, this is real new, and so I'm loving the call-ins, but after last night's focus show just on electroshock, I think to do some shows that have a focus that people can really get a lot of information from are also going to be really valuable for listeners. And it's been a great process of doing that. And so next week we're going to be having another special on electroshock Wednesday night from 9 to 11 p.m. on June 11th. And that is going to be on informed consent and litigation strategies. And a woman who is involved with ectjustice.com, who successfully won, who is a shock survivor and successfully won a malpractice suit against a psychiatrist and settled out of court, which I consider a win, is going to be on talking about issues of informed consent and legal actions that people might be able to think about taking. And so that'll be next Wednesday night from 9 to 11, June 11th.
Is there a place that, like, shows the different nights you're on and what you're talking about and stuff like that?
On blogtalkradio.com/talkwithtenny will bring you to my page, and that has all of the archived shows, and it's where you can also listen live through it when it's on live. And it's on most nights from 9 to 11 p.m.
Okay.
Eastern time.
Great. I know a lot of people who will be very interested, people that have recovered and people that are in recovery, you know, from also the medications, which is also a very huge problem, obviously. So I'm very excited about this. I'm glad you're there and doing this. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I don't know that I know your name, though.
my name's Marie.
Marie, well, it's been really great having you and talking, and I hope that you'll come back anytime, and if you'd like to stay on the line, you know, while we go through or talk to you again soon. I think that you have a really powerful message, and it's important for people to know that despite the torture, despite the crime, despite everything that was done to us, that people can still rise above it and get lives that they want and feel like they're getting out of the whole thing and, you know, getting their lives back. And I think that, you know, it's really important to let people know that they're not alone. And I heard you doing that, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I can honestly say that. I mean, like I said, I'm not even off all, you know, I have 2 medications to get off of, and, you know, a lot of my personalities come back, I've experienced joy and happiness, I've reconnected with people in my life, my eyesight's better, I don't shake, things are really clear, I could read things now and understand them again. I mean, I have more hope now that I've had in years. I have more life now than I've had in years. So, yes. And I'm not completely recovered. So, and I know lots of people that are and have read lots of recovery stories, saw lots of recovery stories, and I've never heard someone say that you don't recover. I mean, unless you stayed on the meds. But everyone that comes off the meds does recover. Everyone does. It's just a matter of time for your body to heal. So
right.
You're right, that is an important message. And I do have hope again. And I was hopeless for years. So thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear this. And I think, you know, the withdrawal process is something that continually comes up in the last couple of weeks of doing this with people, and for people to understand that just because this is a prescribed drug doesn't make it any less of a drug. And that the withdrawal can be very painful, and it can even that there are steps that one can go through in order to titrate down in a way that doesn't put them in their body into shock from the loss of the drug. And
maybe she would mention the Icarus Project for the people,
right, the harm reduction guide for coming off of psychiatric drugs, which you can find at willhall.net. It's a guidebook for people to understand that, like any other drug, when you start coming off of these, you're going to have access to a whole bunch of sensations and experiences and the chemicals which have been damaging brains and altering the chemical makeup. Even one woman the other night described a like a shoot, a chemical shooting kind of feeling in her brain of like, of, and how painful the withdrawal itself is. And so to know that there's support out there for that, and that there are all these people that are going through it and that have successfully gotten off and are successful in getting off.
Well, that just goes to show you how dangerous they really are. That's what people think because they're illegal. You know, you could get a prescription from a doctor, but, you know, look at this one drug. I'm on 1 milligram of Klonopin, and I've been tapering, you know, for around a year just so I don't go into psychosis. Well, people don't even have to do that with street drugs. It doesn't
right.
take long for people to get the street drugs. So these drugs are very dangerous. And you're right, that's what people don't understand. And I didn't understand it either. You know, I bought into the whole thing that it was me, because they keep pointing the finger at you, never the drug, it's you. And then as, you know, they take you off a drug abruptly and you have all these symptoms, they label you with more labels. And then you're starting to have physical things go on. So you're being labeled with fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome and all these things that really are the drugs. You know, there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with your mind. And, you know, it's taken me work and brainwash myself because you are brainwashed. And it's easy to brainwash someone when they're heavily medicated.
Right. And it's programmed and it's intentional. And since 1961, at least, with Irving Goffman's asylums, this has been marked in the field. This was part of what shut down all the institutions in the first place, and 50 years later, they're still doing the same thing. They are still brainwashing people. They are turning people into mental patients. They're treating people as if they're less than human and giving them no opportunities or hope for any kind of future life. And when you're drugged, it's that much easier to accept. And people need to hold on to who it was that they were before they got involved with all of this and know that you can get back to and pass where it was that you were and have a life that you love. And
many of the medications don't not just give you side effects. People have vitamin deficiencies. I know that one of the things that helped me come down off of meds, I only have one now, was realizing that I had a vitamin deficiency. And fact that many people don't realize that 70% of Americans, for example, have a magnesium deficiency. And many of the things that people, unquote, think are mental illnesses are really physical ailments that people have. Then those are the ailments that are going mistreated.
I saw hormone imbalances. I actually have just been recently put on a biochemical progesterone cream about 4 months ago, which is made from yams. It's all natural. And I am, like, sleeping through the night, you know, really restfully. I don't wake up once unless I have to go to the bathroom. I don't have that fight or flight feeling. People that have been on these drugs, it really affects your hormones. You know, cortisol is produced at night, but your progesterone isn't being produced. You'll have all kinds of symptoms. And if you've been on psych meds, your hormones are messed up. You know, so this has also been helping me going through this process because, like for sure you guys both know, when your nervous system has been so compromised by these drugs, a little bit of stress takes us over the edge. And by balancing my hormones, I have stress going on in my life, unfortunately, because that's life, you know. There's
right.
And then just the stress of just everything that's happened, for God's sake. I mean, there's so many things a person has going on when, you know, the loss of their life, you know, memory, coming off these drugs, family situations. And the hormones have helped tremendously alleviate symptoms because it's also because my progesterone was bottomed out from the drugs. So, yeah, that's why a lot of people put on drugs, like the other one was saying. They don't check
for hormone imbalancing, vitamin deficiencies, allergies. They don't check all these physical things that cause people to have mental symptoms. And then if everything physical is okay, then it's just trauma, and no drug is going to help that. That's going to be talking to someone or support groups and getting compassion and love. It's not going to be handled with drugs.
Yeah, and these are all, Marie, such important points that you're making, and they must be underscored. The idea of, you know, the 25 to 30 year loss of life that we're facing, people who are on these psychiatric drugs. I always think that, you know, what if all medical issues weren't written off as somatoform disorder or some kind of hypochondria, and that people were making up that it's all in their heads, and how many things are being missed and just being brushed off as like some quote-unquote symptom of a fraud of a disease that doesn't even exist. And so the lack of medical attention that people actually get.
People have real physical conditions sometimes that mimic that, and it's just, I guess it's just so easy to do that than to really look at, you know, to do a real physical of a person, not just check this, take a few blood tests or whatever else. I mean, you know, just like a normal a thyroid test for some people will, or if they have adrenal or Crohn's disease, or like we're speaking about the hormones and the vitamin deficiencies. You know, this is, I believe, the reason why we have lots of children who are on ADHD medications. If people would just do a vitamin test and ask about what their diet was for, you know, a week or 2 weeks, you know, we wouldn't have so many children on ADHD medication.
Absolutely.
We didn't, this,
oh, I'm sorry. I just want to also make sure that when we're talking about this, we talk about, but there's also the other side of where, like with Justina Pelletier, who was diagnosed with mitochondrial disease, and the psychiatrist came in and say, right, a real actual medical testable thing, and the psychiatrist came in and swooped her up and involuntarily institutionalized her at 15 years old, took custody away from her parents, put a gag order on her parents, and said that mitochondrial disease doesn't exist, that it's somatoform disorder, and it's all in her head. 2 years ago, she was a competitive ice skater, and now she's in a wheelchair. Like, this is the kind of crimes that are being committed against people inside of this, and the audacity of this field. I'm sorry to have, you know, Yvonne, if you want to follow, but I just...
Hopefully she'll be reconnecting with her family very shortly, by the way. But you're right. And it's really ridiculous because this little girl didn't make this up in her head. Tufts Medical Center diagnosed her with it. It's crazy, but I've been reading the post on this. I don't know if you have, but she's in a facility right now where her family are seeing her regularly, and hopefully she's going to be going back to her family very shortly. But she spent her sweet 16th birthday, still not with her family. You're right. It's a horrible case. I've been following it since the beginning. It's really tragic. But the other tragic thing is there was a senator, I don't remember her name, but she said there's 100,000 children, you know, out of 400,000 in foster care that have been taken from their parents when their parents have done nothing wrong. But most people, they don't have the money to fight the state. You know, the taxpayers were very lucky to get the support and financial backup they're getting, because there's thousands and thousands of kids this is happening to, and families this is happening to, not just Justina. Very sad, very sad.
It's happening to many, many, many children and poor children, especially when you said that don't, or even middle income, because battles like this cost a lot of money. And it's always seen as though, you know, you've got these experts, you know, this is the story we have going on there where we have a fight, because everyone else, the court, newspapers and everyone, they say, well, these are the experts. I mean, you just happen to be the parent, you know. You really don't, you're not an expert on your child. You're not an expert on your own family medical history. You know, you're a negligent parent. And I just think I see sometimes on YouTube these stories where parents may have asked for a little help for something, and then they find out that all of a sudden their child has been souped up in what they call the teen industry. There's a, just like there's Corrections of America, there's a teen industry that children are institutionalized and sent away, and they have some education, but it's interrupted. At a very early age, they're put on very toxic medications. I shouldn't say medications, chemicals, when we know that their brain is very vulnerable, and they sometimes don't get reconnected to their community until they're 18 or 19, and that by itself is very traumatic. But because all these people have these names, initials behind their name, and they've been taught by other people who have initials by their name, and they sort this and categorize this from the DSM-5, and this is why Murphy Bill and the subsequent one, I know even if this is defeated, I know that this is going to be the end of it. It's so dangerous because everybody can be sorted into a category just as if you have a horoscope, and it's, you know, it's just like ECT is occurring. There are abuses where wives are being put into medical psychiatric hospitals even today.
Right. Yeah. That's great. Like, everybody has a horoscope. Everybody's going to have a psychiatric diagnosis of the fraud. Area code 613. Your line is open.
Hi, Lauren. It's Sue. How are you?
I'm good, Sue. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I just wanted to say that psychiatry and psychiatrists, it's a criminal organization because of them damaging people. Some people die from electroshock and their pills. I call it a criminal organization.
It definitely is a crime. It is a crime against humanity. There's no two ways around it. And this is something that we absolutely must get to the public attention. And things like Murphy Bill. So there was a breaking news story tonight. And Sue, before I jump to this other thing, I want to just say thank you so much for everything that you offered last night and all of the information and the work of the international campaign to ban electroshock. I think you're doing phenomenal work, and I thank you. And for people to know, like, Sue is in Canada, and so this is the Can-Am connection here a little bit. And to know that if you're in Canada listening, there are people out there that you can reach out to also, and that every country has some version of a liberation movement going on that you can get connected up with. In America, you know, the land of the free, an article came out today, in The Hill called Shift in Strategy for GOP on Mental Health Reform. Did any of you see this?
No, I haven't seen that. No, I haven't seen that, no.
Yvonne,
I'd like
you
to see it, though.
I've gotten some messages about it, too, but I wouldn't relax too much. I understand from another source that they said behind the scenes that they claim that it's dead because Murphy won't compromise, but I won't believe it.
Oh, I don't think that we should stop at all. They're in this article, they're saying, so basically the Murphy Bill, the H.R. 3717, for anybody who might not be aware of what's going on, would slash protection advocacy for individuals who have a quote-unquote mental illness. It would institute a national mandate for involuntary outpatient commitment laws in every state. It would wipe out SAMHSA and all of the alternatives kind of things. It would wipe out the minority fellowship programs and all kinds of other progressive things that have been done through SAMHSA over the years.
And the kiss of death for state psychiatric hospitals is that they would come under Medicaid. And I think
right.
that that's more strong than anything, because most state psychiatric hospitals would not be able to exist if they build under Medicaid only. You know, I was at our state hospital today, and it's over $200,000 per person to keep somebody in there for a year. They would not be able to be open. And if they want all these extra beds, things have to be built or remodeled, and it's not going to happen. But I don't think that we should relax, because I've seen this happen over the last 2 years. There's something that happens, and people think they've won the battle, and they relax. In the meantime, the forces behind are they're getting beachheads. We need not to relax until people realize that, as you said, that
I don't think we should relax at all, and I don't think people should be excited about this, because I don't think people are really paying attention to the words that are being used. So, for example, in the Hill article, it says, energy and commerce leaders are expected to advance non-controversial provisions that involve training for mental health services, coordination of care, and increased funding for research before the end of the year. And so training for mental health services, if they're planning on training in the continual perpetuating the fraud and the lies of psychiatry, then what good is training in mental health services? Second of all, coordination of care is a euphemism for involuntary outpatient commitment in New York State. That's how they sold the whole thing through, that it would be a care coordination that would be occurring. And then increased funding for research. Research for what? Why are any of these things non-controversial? These things should be just as controversial as the wiping out of SAMHSA. And so the fact that this kind of stuff is getting supported on both sides of the aisle, and that they're trying to push this through as a bipartisan deal, there is the agreement that they all have is that it's going to be easy to take away the guns of people who have psychiatric histories. And these people are all supporting database collections of people who have psychiatric histories. Amendments were proposed on a Thursday and passed on a Friday of last week or the week before, May 28th, 29th, to increase funding for the NCIS database to include mental health records. All of our medical records are going to be electronic. And so everybody is at risk, and people don't realize that this is one of the ways to coordinate that effort.
Electronic records, that was done some while ago, and I think it's due to kick in 2014 or 2015. Everyone is going to be on electronic records. But as you said, people should not relax. And also, I said this on Facebook, a lot of people poo-poo me because I don't have a congressperson. But people need to go back and look at their old Senate.
You live in D.C., right? That's right.
Yeah, and, you have to look at your old civics. But we hear politics as a sport. You follow it just like you follow a sports team. And you have to look at how bills become law. And it's a long while. We're not going to be in the back room, any of us, when they make whatever deal. And it's still a live entity. The Senate can come up and have their own bill, and then they'll have some kind of conference. These things, all of them are done as backroom deals. You may see
yep.
on your C-SPAN a vote, but they have to come to conference. So this is a long-term thing that has to be there, and you really have to educate legislators, and we really not had anybody. And I do give credit to the people who have been, advocating against the Murphy bill, that, the few people that have been up there that have the presence there. But really, it's like the pharmaceutical company, the ATA, and all these other organizations, they have a ton of people that are going up to there to those congressional and Senate offices. They have meal allowances. They have trips and stuff that they give Congress senators. They give money to their campaign. And I was saying that for Murphy, one of the things that I encourage people to do if they have other friends that live in his district is to go to his, if we go to these districts.
Pennsylvania, yeah.
You know, you guys, I'm just going to tell you, I'm gonna get off now, but I posted in two groups, I posted your number and stuff for McCall.
Thank you so much.
Right now.
Great, Marie.
I contact you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. But if we go to those, what I was saying is this, if you know someone that lives like I wouldn't have hotel fever. If I knew the opposition that was running against him, and if at least I had a bed to stay, I'd go there for a few weeks or a month and campaign for the other person. And that's the only way that if people feel as though that they'll lose their seat, then they won't do that. So, you know, you have to have a lot of little hands doing a lot of little things because, like I said, they have there's so much money that they're making, and they have the newspapers, the radio, and everything. And they just don't know what. We don't have a media kit or anything that tells them, you know, gives them the 411. All the things that you're saying on the Kenny show, they don't know anything about it. Like I said the other night, I just Googled ECT. Unless you know these other sites or they come up high, you go on WebMD, they're saying the same thing. Oh, this is, you know, this is the best, almost the best thing since sliced bread. So they're very good.
I think that, you know, people definitely should be reaching out to their legislators, regardless of whether they're involved with this bill or any other, and making their experiences known and their perspectives known, and that you have the power in your own district. You have something that they want. You have a vote. And so if you can bring together either yourself individually or with a group of people, or organize and, you know, get a permit and hold a demonstration, you know, to make people know what our voices are and that we do have a power.
Know. I was at the state hospital at our patient council, and they wanted to get someone to come to talk about the Murphy bill. And you know, I think that their bedtime is probably at the time of this thing, but some of them have privileges so they can get on a computer and see the program. But, you know, a lot of people don't know about it. I talked to someone today, and they asked me more about it, who was an ex-administrator for SAMHSA, who was a doctor at the hospital. He said, I'd like to know more about it. He said he didn't know anything about it. But, you know, I don't know how you couldn't know anything about it with everything that's on TV and everything. But,
well, because there are a lot of people who don't pay attention to anything. And that's unfortunately the truth. There are a lot of people in this world who choose not to watch the news, choose not to read the papers, choose not to follow things on the internet because they don't want to be disturbed, and they say that quite bluntly, that they don't like being upset by it. It makes them unhappy, and they don't want to deal with it. And so it's the same thing as what Marie was talking about with hiding the electroshock room in the basement so the people who are working in the upper floors don't even know what's going on down there. They just hide what it is that they do. The same with the lobotomy to cingulotomy to, you know, neurosurgery, that they're still doing it. They're still damaging our brains. They're still committing us into institutions and now forcibly, you know, involuntarily committing us in the community to be on drugs and slaves to them. And it has to end, and the public needs to be aware. And I'm sorry, I'm probably going to take slack for this because I guess this is a time that we're supposed to be happy because, you know, supposedly the Murphy bill is dead, or at least divided up. But
I wouldn't be celebrating until I saw it go in the coffin itself.
But Yvonne, even if they do this piecemeal thing that they're planning on doing, according to the Hill, They're saying it's to advance non-controversial provisions. I think that what they're calling non-controversial provisions are some of the most controversial things about this entire idea that Murphy had in the first place. Training for mental health services. What are they going to do? They're going to train everybody so that next year when Murphy puts the bill forward, everybody will have been brainwashed and go, oh, yeah, this makes sense. Let's do this. What are they going to be training these people into? Coordination of care? Who's getting which person at the lowest bid to be their master and make sure that they take their drugs and get them to court on time? For research, to give Tory more money to cut open more brains for another 30 years? How is this non-controversial?
Well, some of it's they're thinking that, I guess, what some people have put through, they want to tame it down because there are other people on both sides of the aisle, for example, that they disagree of AOT. They're hoping that's one of the things that's gone. What you have to be concerned about is this is how it works in Washington. Another bill that the Energy and Commerce Committee has that has nothing to do with mental health, they can come along and somebody can put an amendment in there very quietly for another bill, and it can pass. And because the bills are so large, people may not pay attention to it unless you just, you know, you have to. That's why you have to make friends with the staff and everything like that, because really I hate to tell people this, but the congressional staff, they're the ones that they know what's going on. Most people, when they go in and talk to their congressperson, unless they're in their district and they know their congressperson personally, if they're in Washington, you go in and you talk to a staff person. They're the ones who write the bills and whatever else. So you have to be really careful because, like I said, you know, 2 or 3 weeks from now, or even a month from now, they can slip something in as amendment. And Murphy and somebody else can say, well, you want to have this, I don't want to use this word, bridge to go across so-and-so in your district, and it's going to cost $10 million. You know, you sign on, you'll attach it onto this bill. And they have a lot of amendments like that because that's how it works.
That's how the amendment that Thompson got through the other night. On the 28th, on the Thursday night, it was proposed, and on the 29th of May, the amendment to further fund the collection of mental health records and get them put into the NCIS, the criminal database, to prevent people from buying guns was put through. What I'm saying is that whichever side of the aisle they're on, they are not our friends. They are pro the idea of taking guns away from people with psychiatric histories. They are pro the idea of involuntary commitment. Barber said it. Barber said that he believes an involuntary outpatient commitment is necessary on the Diane Rehm show. He voted.
I didn't hear that. I thought he said that he thought that was a slippery slope.
And then he continued. No. I'll send you the link of the video. And then he continued, and he said, "But I do believe that involuntary treatment is necessary." He said, "I'm not quibbling over that." He is not the friend of people who have psychiatric histories and who are at threat of being committed on an involuntary basis.
I listened to it while I was online. I thought he said that. They already have involuntary commitment in all 50 states, and that assisted outpatient treatment was a slippery slope.
He did say and then he followed it up by saying that sometimes he does believe that it's necessary. And so as long as there are people who believe that it is necessary, they are not our friends.
Not necessary. AOT is not necessary for...
And it is a legal process, as you say, right? This is not a service.
I think that also might help for people to wise up to realize this is a judicial process, and it doesn't matter whether it's the United States or United Kingdom, all these places that I have said that people have all these mental illnesses, and they expanded the definition. And what happens is you say people have these illnesses, and then they present themselves for help, and then there's no help there. That's what happened, whether you believe that psychiatry is bad or not. That's what happened to the state senator in Virginia. It wasn't that they didn't have a bed. It's just that the person wasn't properly trained to find a bed for the person.
So, again, be vigilant.
And it's good that you have this show on, Lauren, because hopefully when we have forums like this, when people see that, because we all have to be vigilant, because one or two people are not going to be able to keep their eye on every bill. You have to have lots of eyes out here.
And they do it overnight. So even if you're the most diligent person that ever was, and you're on top of it, and you work 24 hours a day at it, they slip things in at 4:40 p.m. and sign them over at 9:01. You know what I mean? It's just because they all agree, Yvonne. They all agree that we need to be controlled and locked up, and that that we don't get the same rights as everybody else. They see us as subhuman.
That remains
the main problem, is that these people are allowed to do this.
Some people don't believe that. We do have some people. Some people don't believe that. And with us giving them more information about, just like you said with the Jackie Kennedy story, realizing that the abuse is for it, that if people are, like I said, you have to decouple violence prevention from mental health. And the fact is that even if you want to find a needle in the house, there's no use burning the whole house down. I think that there are some people that don't believe.
There are some, but they're not the people who are in power, and they're not the people who are putting forth these bills.
We can stop some of them people. Like I said, we have to have a strategy of punishing our enemies and helping our friends, even in small ways. You have a couple of people that lose their seats because of stuff like this, or that they have the threat of that. Then it's not, because you know, like I said, you cannot predict violence. This is all a reaction to Newtown and whatever else, and Jackie and Tori are taking advantage of these unfortunate circumstances, and there will be another one, and we don't have access to press. We should be getting it. I'm hoping that as a result of this show, you will have access soon to mainstream press, but we can't. Every time these instances happen, we have to draw the attention to the people. Most of these people are taking, they're already in treatment. They're taking the medications, and the medications might be the reasons why they're having the,
that's
having
right.
the, and if you want more people to be in treatment, then what you're going to do is you're going to increase the amount of violence, which you say you don't want. And you
right.
should be helping and giving. You should be helping and promoting money for outreach and things like this. I mean, I heard, I think it was Tori or Eva Murphy on one of the NPR shows, not Diane Reeves, but say that, or may have been, that 80% of the people who are homeless have mental illness. I don't believe that that's true. There are many people that are homeless. They just lost their job.
This is an economic issue. This is not and the fraud. I'm just reading this article in The Hill, and it says Murphy's office declined to comment on Thursday's announcement, but indicated that they are still pushing for action on the comprehensive bill. Quote, there needs to be recognition that what Dr. Murphy is advancing is in the realm of serious mental illness, which remains off the table by the opponents of his bill, said Susan Mosichuk, Murphy's chief of staff, in a statement. Quote, we will continue to educate other members that those with SMI, a brain disease, cannot recognize it or agree to treatment on their own, are deserving of, and need specialized services. And so the fraud, these people should be held accountable for the lies that they're telling the media. The fact that they're allowed to call this a quote-unquote brain disease with not a shred of evidence of any kind of a quote-unquote brain disease is ludicrous, and it's criminal. And so they're actively lying to the media, who is then continuing and spilling out this garbage to the public, who then becomes convinced and decides that it's worth billions of tax dollars a year with state power to force people into this torture and these crimes against humanity.
I look forward to seeing you on Fox News and CNO News. You know, CNO News. with Piers Morgan, and that's why I say get all the data and stuff together, because these guys are good. Even Murphy, when they ask, Diane Reeves asked him point blank about AOT, they ask the questions, they just don't follow up because he didn't answer, he gave them a speech. So what happens is they already have a pat answer. I mean, I'm quite sure that they get in the room with a marketing person, and they have already got this down, so they sell it. They have, someone told me, I don't know how true it is, they told me that Jassy really is a marketing person. But they're very shrewd about what they do. They, I almost feel as though, I don't want to use their labels, but they're, there are some people, they say, they don't have any feeling, like a sociopath. I'm almost feeling like that because they can just say these things with such a straight face, How can they sleep at night? Or they must be getting a ton of money. I mean, I wish someone would do an investigation and find out where, I don't want to be up here, I'm not going to call his name, but they said that they were trying to find out where DJ Jaffe got his money from. They didn't think that mentalhealthpolicy.org, they couldn't find that it was a nonprofit, although he was collecting donations on board. We know where Tack gets his money from. We know
NAMI's gotten $500,000 in the first quarter from pharmaceutical industries and health service companies, according to their own website. And so it's a good question as to how, but it is marketing. And Tory must have a phenomenal new publicist with this new book of lies that he has out of the history. What a contorted view of the history of psychiatry that he presents, and that the publicists are doing it, and I'm sure that they're all in the green room sitting there and being prompt and primped onto what and prepped on what it is they're supposed to say, and making sure everybody else is in line. I mean, Tory even has Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter is out there saying that all of the maniacs need to be locked up, that all of the schizophrenics, quote-unquote, need to be locked up. And so
Ann Coulter herself has some
issues. Said Tory's name.
I think that extreme racism, extremisms of anything,
yep.
I think that should be a condition. And that, sometimes I wonder, and I probably get in trouble for saying this, but I wonder sometimes when I see some of these people that are strong proponents, and then they actually get very animated. I actually wonder, are they taking some of Dr. Tory's medication, themselves?
Is that the big secret of the LinkedIn all over there, that he's the psychiatrist of the media, and so they're all getting drugged by him, and he's easily able to brainwash them. I'm not sure that that's what it is, but the way that people just buy what he is selling is, and he is selling. He's selling books. He's selling, he's selling products. He's selling services. He's selling. And so the marketing strategy and the publicists and the media campaign that they have running is convincing what I'm sure are a lot of really loving family members and friends who are just trying to help the ones that they love, and they're being told this garbage and this hogwash as if it's factual, and it just isn't. And so
when you have people that have position, and I don't know this to be true, but, because they say, in quotes, that this is mental illness is pervasive, so many people have it, that I see there's certain connections like Tory and others in the Heritage Foundation, Sally Satel and the American Enterprise Institute, and Wall Street Journal, and some other people that own newspapers and their family members that have mental health issues. People sometimes are ashamed because of the traumatic things that have caused their relatives to be in treatment. And they've been lied to and taken a bill of goods, And they just somehow feel, I talk to people who think that Tory is, that he is so wonderful, you know, and they read his book, and, you know, my son or my daughter, they had, you know, schizophrenia, they just, you know, think it was, you know, wonderful, and so they got on the medication. They don't understand that it's restraint. The person is not doing that. When you say, well, what was he like before? They say, oh, he was going for his master's at Johns Hopkins. They say, what is he doing now? Oh, he's home collecting SSI. And they don't connect the two, and that even after coming off the medication, you know, tapering down slowly, I don't suggest that anybody go off cold turkey, that it still might take a year, a couple years, for the person to get back everything that they've lost. And they just don't see it. I think some psychiatrists have come to this point, and they are voluntarily pulling their patients off a lot of these chemicals. I saw this happening myself. But
right, and you know, earlier I did address the two different NIMH directors who said that this is all, that this is bogus, that there is no evidence to any of psychiatry and these diagnostic categories and how it's so it's all a fraud. And, you know, and the harm reduction guide for coming off of psychiatric drugs, which you can find at willhall.net, is a good starting
point. We want people to be responsible in doing this, because what happens is that sometimes the withdrawal is so great, things happen, people, this is a very difficult process, and what happens is that you need a lot of support when you do this. You need to do it gradually. You need to avail yourself of all the support. Don't go cold turkey and decide that if you've been taking these pills for 10 years, all of a sudden, that you can just go off in 1 week. It doesn't work that way. It's just like someone coming off of heroin or cocaine or any of the other medications. You're going to have all the irritability, some of the side effects. You may have some, you know, you could have cardiac arrest or something. So these are very dangerous chemicals, and you have to be very careful about it. How you're doing it, and you do feel better. I had one lady that came to a support group. She had so many pills, Lauren. This was many years ago. This was at least 12, 13 years ago. She had so many pills that her pill box was the Home Depot, like, toolbox. You know how they have a little plastic thing where you put nuts and bolts in it?
Yeah.
Where you put nuts and you know, nails and stuff like that? She had that. And she had worked for one of the larger Silicon Valley companies, and her mother flew her home to D.C., and she was in some Calgary study, and she had gotten down to 9 medications. She said, I feel so much better now. My skin is cleared up. And I said, how in the world did you get all these medications? Because I didn't believe it. And she came back the next week and showed us this, it was not a pill box, but it was one of those tool things. I said, you probably just felt better from getting all that stuff.
Unbelievable.
The person was co-facilitating me with a nurse and a family member. They said, oh, well, this happens sometimes. They just add and they don't take it. I said, well, how could they do that much? He said, sometimes it happens. I said, because some of the pills were from psychiatry. Some of them were for the side effects. You know, so you had so much. Did you eat? And she said it was hard to eat because she said that she had to take all these pills. Her skin was off, become all broke out and everything too.
It really presents so many issues, and we have so much to continue to talk about. I just want to remind people that the Alliance's 34th annual Bastille Day vigil is going to be held on the sidewalk in front of the New York State Office of Mental Health in Albany from July 13th to July 16th for 72 hours, starting at 6 p.m. We sit vigil for 72 hours because that is how long that the state can pick you up, detain you, assess you, and treat you to determine whether or not you need to be permanently institutionalized. If you have an idea for a show or would like to be a guest or have an anonymous tip that you would like to leave or talk to me about anything, the Talk with Tenny tip line is area code 718 273-8708. I'd like to thank Virginia and Kathy and Marie and the gentleman who called and Yvonne and everybody else who's out there listening. I'm going to ask you to keep on talking until next time. Talk to you soon.